This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, we're back on the Place to Be Nation. This is Will. I'm joined by Pete from Titans of Wrestling, my good buddy Chris Zellner, and Dylan from the Wrestling Culture Podcast, and we're reviewing wrestling. Of course, that's what we're doing here. We're reviewing WrestleMania 30, the Showcase of the Immortals, and we come to the immortal, The Undertaker, 21-0. He's going for 22-0. Didn't happen. Brock Lesnar beats him. Holy shit. None of us predicted this the other night, except for Dylan's clairvoyant brother. Which one was it, Dylan?
Devin.
Devin, okay. Dylan's brother Devin predicted this in a dream. He has powers. Okay, so when the end of the world happens, when Devin thinks, let me know, okay? Anyway, so Dylan, we're going to get your thoughts. I know match-wise, I don't think any of us were really excited about this. I was really excited in the back of my mind and my heart because I remember the 2002 matches being so entertaining and exciting, and I was hoping that this would be like that one. What did you think?
This is probably, I'm going to say, one of the weirdest matches I've ever seen in my life, and not entirely because of the finish, although in large part because of the finish. This was the whole thing surrounding this was really, really weird, because I actually, you know, I have people that will occasionally tell me things about wrestling shows that turn out to be true. Not that I'm the most well-connected person in the world, but when you're a geek to the degree that I am, for as long as I have been, occasionally people will tell you little nuggets and say, hey, keep your eye open for this. And I got a text message today from somebody, I guess it was late last night, but I got saying there's going to be a surprise finish to Brock Taker. And this is somebody that in the past was somebody, for example, that told me Ric Flair was in rehab partially the story of why he was in rehab when Ric Flair was actually in rehab. So it wasn't like some random person just making a statement. So I kind of thought, man, are they really going to have Brock win? But even then, you didn't really think Brock was going to win. I thought this guy was kind of bullshitting me or just, you know, or maybe there'd be some other sort of surprise. Maybe Sting would show up or, you know, they'd do some weird run-in with somebody. I have to say, the match I thought was really bad. Not horrifically terrible, not the worst thing you're ever going to see in wrestling or anything, but just really bad. Taker did not look good at any point in the match. Brock looked either unwilling or incapable of carrying him. I'm not sure which was the case. It was hard to tell. The crowd was kind of, we sort of predicted this the other night, but the crowd did not respond at all to this match. They were very flat for everything. And when Taker ended up losing, there was huge shock. I've never seen a response like that to any wrestling match ever. I've been watching wrestling my entire life, and I've never seen a response to a wrestling match like that ever in my entire life. And yet, in a way, it makes sense in a way. If Lesnar is going to go on to challenge Daniel Bryan, which I think is a logical thing at this point,
yeah,
then it makes sense. And it makes absolute sense. It was actually a smart decision. The problem is nobody wants to see Taker lose. On top of the fact that nobody wants to see Taker lose, nobody wants to see Taker lose in a bad match when he's had so many good matches at Mania.
Right.
But the flip side to that is, you know, Taker losing in a bad match, I think, kind of in a way is sort of poetic because, you know, he just had nothing left. I mean, it was obvious tonight. He just had nothing left at all. And, I would not have wanted to see him go through another WrestleMania anyway after the performance tonight. I'm still not sure it was the right decision. It was certainly a memorable decision. You know, the other thing that really stands out to me is it blows my mind that they never did Cena and Taker at WrestleMania. To me, that will be, you know, people talk about them never doing Austin versus Hogan. That was always going to be an issue because who was going to job? You know, who was going to take the fall? The fact that they never did Cena and Taker at WrestleMania, to me, it is the ultimate, I can't believe they never did this match in the history of this promotion. It just blows my mind that they never did it. I just hope that this means Brock's going to work more dates and that this means they're going to have a match with him and Bryan and really build it and make it a big deal. because otherwise it you know, whether Taker wanted to take the fall to Brock, which had been rumored, or whether something else happened, it just felt really, it felt sad, but not just in the "you're sad, the streak is over" way. It felt sad in the "this is kind of pathetic" way.
Okay, well, I'm going to come back to you because I want to talk about this match at length. Chris, thoughts?
As we've been doing this show, I have traded some messages with somebody who is close to the company. Let's just put it that way. And they flat
damn,
out.
Y'all, hold on. You guys are full of insiders tonight. Rock on.
Yeah, I got they nothing, told, so don't worry.
They told me, they said, you should have seen this coming when they were pushing that Brock wanting the title at Mania. This was the way, you know, to get him out of that program and keep him strong for the title run that he's going to be going on this year. So he said, this was in the works. Also, this person told me that Undertaker is pretty much physically shot, like Dylan said. And the way he worked the match is he worked it in a way that he wanted to look like he was physically shot, you know, in a way. I mean, he didn't want to have a bad match, but he wanted to make, I mean, that's why it was, everything was so slow on his end. And just in little stuff like that, Brock's in, I think Brock was just insanely gassed. His head at one point was purple. He was so blown up. He was sweating like crazy. I mean, he looked like he was about to explode. The finish was insane. I don't think I've ever seen a crowd react to a finish like that, as far as like the visual. And the WWE
Never.
Productions is five-star effort tonight on capturing the visuals of the fans.
Hey, we did have Ms. Girl. Ms. Girl was badass.
Yeah, but this was amazing. The black guy with the glass has become an internet phenomenon tonight.
With the mouth wide open, yeah.
All over Twitter. He's all over everything right now, social media, Instagram, everything. Fine. He is a huge star tonight.
When he shows up on TMZ, I'll call him a huge star. Keep going.
But, Adam Carolla's even tweeted him out, you know, plugging his show as a meme. It's amazing how they hit that. And that totally killed the theory that was going around that, oh, the Undertaker called this finish in the ring on the spot. No way in hell.
No way.
The production was so ready for that finish, you know, showing the crowd like they did. There was no way this was on the fly. There was no way that this was a mistake. I mean, people need to, you know, that conspiracy theory bullshit needs to go out the door on this one. This was purely planned, word to go. And the fact that the way that, you know, the announcers gave him a standing ovation, this was fully treated like this was his last stand. But I don't think it's his last stand. I think, man, tomorrow night, well, you know, he may try to give a retirement speech or whatever, and somebody, whether it's Sting or somebody, is going to, you know, interrupt him and blah, 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 blah. We'll see him again, I think, at least one more time. If you talk about Cena and Taker at WrestleMania, that match should have happened. Yeah, that should have happened. But we can also say, and I know Dylan's not the biggest Rock fan, but Rock Undertaker should have been a WrestleMania match, at least, you know, over the years. That should have happened. That
Austin versus Undertaker could have happened. You know, I mean, there's so many matches that didn't happen with the Undertaker. But I want to continue talking about this, but I want to get Shu's thoughts, and then we'll jump into some hypotheticals. Shu.
Now they're talking about Sting. I say there's no way in hell they're going to let Sting retire the Undertaker since he has no history with the company. I don't think that's what you're hinting at, though. I thought the match was kind of a mess. It was like really kind of, to me, it was like a little worse than the Cena Bray Wyatt matches, and where they were trying stuff and they were just missing. It was real plotting. You saw Lesnar working over Taker's leg, and then he just shit-cans it later on. And Taker's working Lesnar's arm, and then just goes away from it. And then they kind of, you know, then they're just going for finishes. And the crowd just didn't buy Lesnar into possibly beating Taker until it actually happened. And then the crowd is just gasping and just in shock. And I mean, I hate to say it, the only thing you can really compare it to is when Owen Hart died, in a way, where it just, like, it was just
No.
You don't
no,
think so?
No. No.
I'm sorry, it sounds like a dick thing to say, but, man, I mean, it... I mean, they took it like this is, you know...
Dude, that's like saying that Daniel Bryan bringing his sister and his niece in the ring is going to end badly because he won a three-way at WrestleMania.
As in, I've never seen
him. You just ruined my shitty joke.
I'm sorry.
And it just sounded, I've never seen a crowd just hush up like that. It was just like, boom, okay. And it was done. And I actually kind of thought Lesnar was going to win on the build, but I wasn't about to publicly make that statement because that's just insane. Yeah, I was not going about to go there because common sense says it wasn't going to happen. But like I was talking earlier before the show, Lesnar is a type of guy who I can see because Taker is a mark for Taker in his gimmick, where if he's going to put anyone over, he'd put over a legitimate tough guy like a UFC guy who has a rep for being a good worker. Who he had good matches with before, and you know he respects him.
Yeah, great point.
So if anyone was going to break the streak, it would have been Lesnar and stuff. But yeah, overall the match was really disappointing. You'd hate to see Taker go out on such a whimper of a bad match, and really it's just really sad.
Well, I want to comment on a few things that respond to individuals. I think it's a great point you made that the reason Taker lost to Lesnar was because he is a legitimate tough guy, UFC champion. And I'm sure in Taker's mind, that's the kind of guy he wants to lose to. I know all of us, Dylan, we've talked about this at length in private phone conversations on other podcasts. Taker should be losing to an up-and-comer or to you know, spearhead like a John Cena heel turn, something that was kind of monumental if the streak ever, you know, goes away.
Here's a question. It looks like they were going to originally...
I am free-flowing. Don't interrupt my free-flow.
Okay. Well, the subject's here.
What were you going to say?
Since they turned Daniel Bryan heel for that couple of weeks and people were discussing how maybe he'd be heading towards work with Taker because he's safer than or more... not as physical as Brock to have a classic match at Mania. Do you think you would have a job for Daniel?
No, neither
do I. Yeah.
No, because of what you just said, I think it would have been a great match that stole the show the way that Punk Taker stole the show last year. But then after that, where do you go? You go to a shitty main event without Daniel Bryan. You know, right. That's what happens. Unless Cesaro's in your main event, right? And they give Cesaro Daniel Bryan's spot. Not going to happen. But
yeah.
I mean, now we're just fantasy booking. But no, I think you're right. I think that's why Taker agreed to lose to Lesnar, is because he respects him as a man. Because I'm sure Taker doesn't give a fuck about all that wrestling bullshit. You know what I mean? He cares about perception, and in his mind, I'm sure he thinks UFC is king. You know what I mean?
He's a mark for his gimmick.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he's a mark for UFC, too, because he's there all the time.
Right. And so I agree with you on that point, Shu. I agree with Chris about those crowd reactions. I mean, those are crowd reactions. I mean, even if you didn't like the match, right, you're never going to forget this match, you know?
No.
And on the match quality standpoint, Dylan, I kind of want to watch this match in a vacuum along with Cena Wyatt again, because I think maybe this match – because I thought this match was better than Taker Triple H for Mania last year. At least I was more interested in the match because they were doing a lot of the Taker spots. Or not last year, but last year.
28 years ago.
Bought was last year.
No. Brock versus Triple H.
Oh, Brock. Sorry. Right. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought this was better than Brock Triple H because at least I'm invested in the streak. And what I want to say is, if not Lesnar, Dylan, who would you have Taker have lost to?
Well, I mean, I've always contended that the best person to end the streak would be John Cena, using it as a vehicle for a heel turn. I've been saying that for probably close to 5 years. Does that mean that I think John Cena should turn heel? That's not necessarily what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're going to end the streak, that's the best guy to do it, and that's the best circumstance. This is one of those weird things where I don't know whether I think it's very difficult to say whether or not this was smart or not. I mean, on the one hand, it's smart in the sense that if you were ever going to have Taker lose the streak, the show, this show with Daniel Bryan and all that's been going on with him was probably the show to do. You know, from that perspective, it was probably smart. On the other hand, it really just feels like a wasted opportunity unless Brock is going to work a lot more dates than he has, and unless they have a whole lot of confidence that Brock is going to really be a guy that can really move business in a meaningful way for them. Now, having said that, this might also be an indicator of something else that is related to this new era, so to speak. You know, they don't have to worry about pissing off the fans nearly as much anymore, because with the TV rights deal and with the network being what the network is, and you're kind of on the hook for 6 months, you know, like, it's a different ball game. The fear of backlash that I think may have protected Taker's streak some in the past, I don't think it's really there anymore. Because, yes, they ultimately did the right thing with Daniel Bryan tonight, and I think they did the right thing with Cesaro and the right thing with The Shield. But the point is, they don't have to, book on the fly. They can do basically whatever they want within the parameters of this new world that they've created for themselves. And, of course, the other thing is that you could argue this was the right show to do it on, because one of the themes of the show was the old guard, with, I guess, the exception of Cena, sort of giving way to the new guard. So that was sort of there, too. But there's never – no match – I guess the match I would compare this most to in terms of a response would be when Taker lost to the Great Khali at Judgment Day 2006. Now, it's nowhere near as extreme. But I do remember watching that and just the crowd being in absolute shock that Khali won, and in the fashion that he won over Taker. But even that, I mean, if that's the closest comparison, that should tell you how incredibly original the response to this match was, because you're talking about a difference in degree so large that it's a difference in kind.
Okay, I'll take that. Well, you know, here's something I also wanted to mention. If they would have booked Brock properly from the get-go. I know my buddy Phil Schneider from Segunda Caída, he always says that the reason Brock Cena was so great is because Brock lost. I think that's complete bullshit. It was great because of the way it was worked. You know, if Brock wins that exact same match, it's still a great fucking match and your match of the year in WWE, right? I mean, it doesn't not make it the match of the year. So, I think if he beats Cena, if he doesn't lose the Triple H the year before in a dud, you know, and whatever, and he goes into this undefeated since he came back, then
totally
he
different.
Loses totally different, right? And then this match that we have, you're thinking, oh shit, Brock Lesnar's undefeated since he came back. I think he could be the guy. But when you've seen him treated as subpar to Triple H, to John Cena, you know what I mean? That you can destroy John Cena for 20 minutes, and Cena, F you on the stairs, or whatever the fuck he did to end that match, done. Son, I am on a podcast. This is a professional show, okay? Yeah, as you can tell, my son has invaded the man cave space, so yeah, we have our fifth co-host here. Anyway, having said that, I think that's what hurt this match more than anything, was the way Brock had been booked in the last 2 years as a guy to get over their WWE mainstays, Triple H and John Cena. You know,
yeah, doesn't help in the long run.
Does not help.
Oh, yeah.
When Taker says, I'll drop my streak to Lesnar. That's who I want to lose to. You know,
yeah.
Then it's like, well, fuck, man. We just made this guy look like a jobber for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
A bumbling idiot, you know.
Yeah, he has a ceiling. He doesn't win.
That's,
you know, unless he's defeating Punk.
Right, you know, and even CM Punk, who, I mean, had a great match with Taker last year, had a
yeah.
great match with Brock last year. Even then, right, I mean, it kind of makes like, well, why didn't Triple H win or beat the streak for those 2 years? He beat Brock Lesnar. He should have been able to beat old-ass Undertaker.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, why, you know, like Dylan said, why don't you just have John Cena win, you know? Because if this is leading to Brock Bryan, I'm all for it. Because what we've seen is that Brock can have great matches with great wrestlers, whether it's Cena or Punk. You know, these are big main event type wrestlers, right? Punk was a big main event guy. Cena was a big main event guy. Bryan's a big main event guy, you know. And Taker is a big main event guy, but he's against, you know, the matches that he was really great in, your Punk match, to varying degrees, Triple H matches, the HBK matches, whatever, you know. It's because the guys he was wrestling were wrestling as little guys. Even Triple H was wrestling as a little guy who has to stand up to the big bad boogeyman. Whereas now Brock Lesnar's the big bad boogeyman, doesn't work as well because Brock hadn't been protected the way he should have been over the last 2 years. Chris, disagree with any of this before we move on?
I think you're pretty much right on the head on that. But there's one thing I want to mention, though, that this proves tonight.
No more fan reaction commentary, Chris. Just going to say that.
No. Well, one thing that's proved tonight, and I don't know if it was Wade Keller or somebody said this on Twitter, and I totally agree with, is this finish tells the story, never believe something's for certain again. Because you never know when somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. And that's now in the fans' memories now. Because I had two friends tonight that were over here and were huge Undertaker fans. I mean, they've been Undertaker fans forever. And they were legit upset. Visibly
upset. Oh, my buddy was livid.
About that. And they said, and one of them said to me, says, I can't take anything for granted anymore when it comes to, you know, wrestling. You never know who's going to win. Now.
But you know what, Chris? As a wrestling promoter, as a wrestling fan, isn't that kind of fun to have that feeling again?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. You know, I was completely shocked. I don't think I've been shocked like that. You know, you talk about comparison. I don't think I've been shocked like that since Brett Shawn, since Montreal.
That might be close. I'm trying.
That's why people thought it was a screw job. They fully believe that. I mean, there's people that fully believe that was a total screw job tonight, but it wasn't, of course. But people believe that shit, and the way it was passed off in a way. But yeah, it was the complete shock that everybody knew going in that okay, this is the finish, and then bam, you know, you got hit like a ton of bricks. Fantastic job by the writing team on that, I think. And we can argue who was the right. Who should have broke a streak or not, but the way it was done was fantastic.
I love that they even had the number 22 Brock Lesnar casket right there. You know, okay, yeah, Taker's winning, done. You know,
and then 21-1 showed up on the video.
Yeah, when they throw the video screen up there, it was like, dude, oh, pour salt in the wound. Why don't you?
Sorry, Patriots fans, but dude, they just booked Patriots Giants at the Super Bowl. That's exactly what they just did. Anyway, so it'll be interesting to see the fallout from this. Real quick, simple yes or no. Taker's last match, yes or no, Pete?
I think there's one more. I think it's got to be a retirement match.
Yes or no, motherfucker?
No.
Okay, Chris.
One more match.
Chris?
No.
Dylan.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, cool. We'll talk about that on another podcast, but let's move on to a much more interesting and important subject. That's the Diva match, because I know we were all looking forward to this the other night. Yeah. And let's go back to Lesnar Taker. Fuck the Divas. So, as we were saying, Dylan, why do you say yes, this is it?
I don't think... Taker being, knowing what we know about Taker, and knowing about his position in the company, knowing sort of his mentality, and I think Chris pointed this out on my show that actually, I believe it was Chris, maybe I'm imagining this, that Taker had mentioned previously that, you know, it was rumored that he wanted to lose to Brock when they did that angle with Brock at UFC 2-3 years ago.
That was mentioned on Meltzer the other day.
In a way, this shouldn't be that shocking. You know, in a way, this should not be that shocking. But the impression I get from this is, first of all, there's no, you know, Taker just lost his value because the streak was his value. You know, especially given what we know he's capable of doing physically at this point. Without the streak, there's no value in him. I mean, and that may sound mean or you know, not nice or whatever, but like it's like you know, it's like it would be like Ric Flair coming back after he lost at WrestleMania. You know, like, and the difference is, Rick, you know, the Undertaker is not a philandering alcoholic. So I don't. Well, maybe he is. Actually, I don't know. But the point is, yeah. There's no reason for him to come back. There's no compelling reason. He's a guy who barely wrestles as it is. I don't think there's any money in any other match with him, because I don't think even a match with Sting would really have any interest if you take the streak out. Well, I shouldn't say any interest, but so much less interest that it would be marginal at best. You know, to me, without a compelling reason, and knowing what we know about Taker as a guy who sort of is the standard bearer of the old way of doing things, or at least that's his reputation, I think he wanted to go out with a loss. He wanted to go out on his back. I think you're going to see him. It's going to be just like with Austin. You know, Austin lost to The Rock, I guess, what was it, at 2003 WrestleMania?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was his last match. And we didn't know it was the last match at the time, but it was. And I think it's going to be the same thing here.
All right. Pete, do you still disagree? Or
I still think there's a little bit of value in Taker. I don't think he has zero. I think he has a retirement match that he could do and then maybe do the right thing and do what the company wants.
Instead of what he wants?
Yeah, I
don't agree with that. What about you, Chris?
I still think the Sting match happened somehow, some way.
Okay.
That's, but I can't see him laying down for Sting, for someone. I mean, because they still, I'm not saying, I just can't imagine him laying down for Sting, because that does no good whatsoever.
No, he won't jaw for Sting. No.
Yeah, okay.
We'll call tonight's match the death, and we'll call the Sting match the resurrection. How about that? You know, does that sound good for you? Enough biblical references there? Anyway, now let's move on to the Divas. Did anyone pick AJ to win on the prediction show?
Didn't I call AJ? I didn't.
I don't know. I know you have all your...
I think Chris did. I think Chris did.
I know, Dylan, you picked Brie. Pete, who did you have winning this thing?
I didn't even pick, because I just started picking the product again, and I could give a shit less about a fucking Divas.
I thought that actually when Nikki put her finisher on Brie, I thought at that point in time Nikki was winning it. You know, I thought that's what was going to happen. Kind of set up that Cena Bryan, or Cena and Nikki versus Bryan Brie thing going on, you know, somewhere down the line. But that didn't happen, so I was a little shocked about that. But did anyone like this match? I didn't.
It was okay. I didn't hate it. I mean, you talk about the death spot. You got to go on after Taker loses the streak at WrestleMania.
I did feel bad for him, but I kind of predicted that was going to happen.
That's the worst spot you could. I mean, the fact that they got any response at all, I think, is a testament to their effort, whether you thought it was a good match or not. Because that's probably the single worst spot you could have in the history of wrestling. I don't know if you could have a worse spot. So. Kudos to them for trying, you know.
For sure the worst WrestleMania spot in the history of WrestleMania. I can't imagine following that.
I don't know, man. Those 10 guys who were in that 10-way on WrestleMania 10 who didn't get to wrestle at all, I think that might have been worse.
The Divas match served its purpose, and that's all it needed to do. It filled the time it needed to fill. You know, that's all. It was what it was, and... It's just the buffer match, you know. That's all it needed to be.
Kind of odd, Chris. What, you know, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Actually, yeah, to me, it was kind of odd that was the send off for Vicky Guerrero, because supposedly that was Vicky's last night. And to me, like, you would think that there would have been something,
an angle,
sort of more dramatic, and there wasn't. It was just like, okay,
I was expecting her to like go on a big time tantrum and announce that you know, he was quitting the company because AJ, you know, beat everybody. I thought that was a setup, but no.
I'm going to say that tomorrow night will be her send off. I think it was announced tonight. I know, but I think you know, Vince or somebody might have talked her into, hey, let's send you off on Raw the right way or something.
God, you know what would be great is if they did like this big thing promoting the end of an era,
a legend getting sent off. They don't tell you who, and the end of the night is Vicky Guerrero and not Taker.
That would be so great.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
That would piss every single human being. The PWO would blow up. I mean, on everyone bitching about this.
Dude, I would love it. I think that would be the greatest thing on earth. I mean, because I thought Vicky Guerrero was really underrated in her role. I thought she was awesome
Me
with
too.
Dolph Ziggler. I've been in the crowd, like, when she was at her peak of, like, bitchiness. Dude, the crowd legitimately hates that woman. For as beloved as Eddie Guerrero was, they hated Vicky Guerrero and her excuse me line and everything else. She worked it to perfection. I thought she was awesome. I think that she's one of the few characters in the last 5-10 years that they've really, really underutilized, more so than even like guys like Dolph and those guys. I think that they really missed the boat with like pushing Vicky Guerrero to her full potential. You know, I think that they could
have
so much more mileage out of her. Having said that, a buddy of mine tonight, theorized that they want to keep AJ happy in the hopes of getting Punk back. That was kind of Vince's logic. I don't know if I agree with that, but might be. But, you know, if Punk didn't show up tonight, he didn't show up in Chicago, I'm going to say that there's a 99.8% chance that dude's done. You know what I mean? Those are some big paydays to miss.
Well, they haven't buried him on television. AJ has been kept strong, so there's definitely... there's something to that where they're hoping that Vince at least is hoping they come.
But that's what I'm thinking. I think it's hope, though. That's what I'm saying. That if you know they're keeping his girlfriend strong, and he's nowhere to be seen, you know what I mean? And he's fine.
And they put Lita in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I don't think that
matters. She deserves it, but you know, there's another connection to the Punk.
Yeah, you know. But having said all that. The Divas match, in a way, right? I mean, if anything was going to save the main event, it was having that buffering match, right? If anyone wants to argue about a buffer match, that's the reason you have a buffer match.
Yeah, but something else saved that main event. We'll talk about it in a minute. That's a good segue, but there's something else that saved that main event.
Well, no, we're not talking about saving it, but I'm just saying, like, you know... You know, if there's an argument for that buffer match, that's part of the reason. You have to have Undertaker lose, you know, and make the crowd think that they got a Montreal moment.
See, Johnny Sorrow just messaged me, and he said even the chicks match was important. And he was glad that AJ Punk won.
That's AJ Punk. That's her new name, AJ Punk.
Yeah.
Not CM Punk, AJ Punk. I love it. Anyway, but all right, guys. So main event, we already knew the main event was going to be Batista versus Orton versus Daniel Bryan. We didn't know how Bryan was going to get in. We didn't know Triple H was going to put him over clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring. We didn't know if Triple H was going to insert himself in the match. But they still have to follow Taker losing the streak, a crowd in shock. They still probably, right when the match finally started, probably only been 15 minutes since Taker had lost, because they, you know, Divas match relatively short. And so, you know, I'm going to go with you first, Chris, thoughts on the main event, and then talk about what saved this main event.
Okay. Yeah. The first half of this match was, you know, the work was fine, of course, but the crowd was just not into it. But here comes the saviors, Triple H and Stephanie. When they came out, the fans just erupted because they knew, oh shit, here we go. You know, and they were so great in their roles in this part of the show. You know, Triple H in his WWE jumpsuit, you know, kind of like an All Japan type deal where the guys come out there in All Japan jumpsuits back in the day. You know, that was cool.
He looked like Chicky Star. He looked like Chicky Star.
Yeah. So you had him out there, you know.
I'm sure that's what he's aiming for.
Then the whole deal with Scott Armstrong was so great. You know, the hat tip to something that happened in damn October. You know, you bring that back out as part of the story. And then Scott Armstrong doesn't do the fast count on Brian. He does a regular count, and Triple H is pissed off at him. Then you have the tope on the floor. Now, I don't know if you noticed this on the show, and I noticed on the board, but Triple H and Stephanie's kids were in the front row. They're right there with Linda and Cena's mom and Cena's whole family. That was the front row on that side.
Triple H's parents were in there too.
Yeah. So that this goes on, and Bryan hits Triple H with this great tope, and Armstrong and Stephanie. I think Stephanie was actually hurt.
I think that was legit.
Yeah, because you could see on the replay, she had those heels on. The way she came down, it was like a heel game. Yeah, so, and she was limping off, you know, when they showed them, you know, leaving the area. But that added the extra heat to the match that it needed. And Bryan was so goddamn great this match, selling everything and coming back. And Batista and Orton did, I thought they did a damn good job in this match in their roles, too. Orton taking that bump on the monitor on the
horrifying
RKO was insane. Oh, my God. How he kept going without, you know, not having any back problems, which he probably does hurt.
And then Batista's working over his back after that, and he didn't look like he was selling. He looked like that freaking hurt.
Yeah, he looked legitimately concerned for Orton because he was just kind of standing there. Oh shit, what do I do?
And then he starts working the back, and it's like, what the hell?
Hey, that's a smart thing to do. There was blood.
I'm thinking Orton let him know that, you know, I'm okay. We can keep going. And then Bryan doing the Mick Foley, you know, the carting off to the ramp and then jumping off the cart was great. I love the match. I thought this was the match of the night, personally.
Oh, wow.
I thought it's overbooked as hell, but triple threat matches are supposed to be overbooked.
That was a quote I used on PWO. They are supposed to be overbooked.
Yeah, they're supposed to be overbooked. You know, it was, and I was surprised there were more run-ins. We predicted on prediction show that we thought there would be like all kind of people coming out, but there wasn't. Only Triple H and Stephanie, and another clean finish. And Batista being the one that tapped out was amazing to me.
Yeah, because, I was really shocked by that.
Orton did all the jobs going in, so what use is another one for Orton? But no, Dave tapping out?
I think that says they're turning Batista face in the next couple months, because, you know, that's the theory is, you know, if you're turning face, you can afford to do jobs as a heel.
Yeah,
but I might be wrong.
Let's hold off on that, because we'll talk about, like,
I want to say one thing real quick about post-match. The biggest loser, I think, of the night is poor Brie Bella, because she tweeted that they wouldn't allow her to come down to the ring to celebrate with Daniel. That was pretty shitty.
You serious?
Yeah, she tweeted that. She wasn't allowed to go down and celebrate.
Oh, man, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, that's whatever, man.
That could be a Total Divas angle.
Yeah, it could be too.
Maybe, dude, but no. This company's pretty fucking stupid, dude. That sounds like a petty, shitty company thing to do. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, they've done so much. You know, they've made so many stupid decisions that I could do. Now, Dylan, Chris brought up that Triple H and Steph saved the match, but I want you to go from a different angle because you were there at WrestleMania 27 when The Miz and John Cena were in the main event. And I know you know this, that the reason that match was hurt from the beginning, I mean, ignore the work, but everybody knew The Rock was going to come out. So the crowd was too busy wondering when The Rock would come out or when the run-ins or the interruptions would happen to actually worry about the match. And I think that's what made the early portion suffer from a crowd standpoint. Well, when is Steph and Triple H going to come out? And thankfully, they didn't come out at the very end. They kind of came out in the middle or kind of early in the match so that part got there. And then once they came out and the crowd got that interruption out of the way, they're fully involved in the match. What do you think?
I actually don't disagree with that. I think, you know, it was... Again, when Bryan first came out, he did not get the pop he got at the beginning of the night. And you could attribute that to a lot of things.
We knew that was going to happen.
I didn't know it was going to be that big a disparity, though. I was seriously concerned because of the Taker situation. Now, I figured Bryan would win him back by the end of the match, but I was concerned about that. Because the level of shock after the Taker loss was so much,
even more so than I would have guessed. I was a little bit concerned about that, but they want him back. They want him back over. And I do think the pivotal turning point was Stephanie and Triple H come out. I mean, Stephanie, Triple H's cheeky star look was outstanding, but Stephanie looking like 1978 Suzanne Summers from Three's Company with that get up she was wearing was like, I mean, that was perfect too. That was like a perfect attire choice for her.
Yeah, that one's for Johnny Sorrow. By
somebody said on Twitter that she looked like an evil circus ringmaster.
Yeah, with the little neck collar and stuff. Yeah,
It was just there was nuance to a lot of that stuff, and I think part of the get-ups even that these guys were in added a lot. But, as a match, I don't know which one I like better, the opener or this one. I'm with Chris in the sense that this might be my match of the night. I thought they were both very, very good. This was more of your Attitude Era style, run-ins, injury angles, crazy table bumps. But it was worked exactly how it should have been worked, in the sense that Daniel Bryan kept coming back. He kept overcoming the odds that he decisively won. But to me, despite all of that, the real star of the match was Randy Orton. Because to go on after taking that, watching that with my best friend sitting next to me, who's a fan, but by no means a hardcore fan of the level we are, and watching his reaction to that bump on top of that monitor, and the monitor looked bent. Too. I mean, it looked he was completely, he thought for sure they were going to stop the match. He's like, well, that's it. Orton's, they're going to have to get him out of there. And when the stretcher came out, he was thinking the stretcher was for Orton.
I thought it was for Orton.
I was like, this is an angle for Brian. I knew they were going to do the Terry Funk sort of, he comes back and fights back bit. I was almost positive that's what they were going to do. But that bump was so horrific that, it could have fooled anybody. And the fact that Randy Orton went on and worked the match, and not only did he work it, but he worked it at a good pace in a physical fashion, took other big bumps, that is a huge testament to him. As much as I've criticized him over the years for various things, he deserves a ton of credit, because if he had not been able to continue, or if something worse had happened, or if he had just said, man, fuck this, I'm in too much pain, we're going to have to half-ass it, it could have hurt Daniel Bryan's moment. It really could have.
And, I agree.
The way he plowed through was really impressive to me. Bryan deserves a ton of credit. I mean, he was really probably overall the best guy in the match. But Orton being so ballsy, it really, it amazed me. I mean, this is a guy who broke his collarbone banging the mat, for Christ's sake. He's not exactly somebody that when Ultimate Warrior was talking to the Hall of Fame about phony tough guys in wrestling, Randy Orton's like the first guy you think of. to see him do that was, really super impressive, and I think speaks a lot to him as a performer on a big stage for all the shit I've given them. This was kind of the night where both Orton and Triple H, for all the shit I've given those guys, really kind of, proved me wrong, at least for one night.
Yeah, Shu, so which one, the opener or the main event? Which one did you prefer?
I like the first one better. I like the opener because, again, I liked it because it was more old school feel, more worked, while the main event was a total spectacle and it was more of a it was sports entertainment at its finest. But I want to get back to that, Randy. I mean, when he starts working on his back after he takes that bump, I mean, it looked like Orton. I mean, even though I know he gave him the okay, I mean, it didn't look like he was selling. That looked like that was legit pain. And then when he took the bump, you see him glare at the monitor like, you fucking piece of shit. Like, he was so angry at the thing, like this inanimate object and stuff. I thought, again, Triple H and Stephanie, like everyone said, coming in, saved the heat and really added a lot, really fueled it. And I thought that might have been the most ass Triple H has ever shown by doing that, because that's not like him to fail when he interferes and stuff. It just doesn't happen. And it looked like something like straight out of like Ric Flair, like something blowing up in his face.
Not only that, Shu, but Triple H had to be helped to the back by the referees. You never see Triple H.
Never, unless it's legit injury. Unless the unless it's when they're talking about his quad blowing up on him or something like that.
But that's what I'm saying, you know? Though. Like, yeah. like you never see, like, the refs, like, you saw it with Vince McMahon all the time, right? Like, Briscoe and Patterson were always carrying that guy from the ring. And maybe they finally learned something, like, hey, we kind of, if we want to be Vince, we got to act like Vince.
Yeah, I guess, you know, now that Triple H isn't trying to be the number one spot, he can now show ass and be productive.
Yeah.
And stuff. Be used as an on screen character real well. Like him and Stephanie right now are on all cylinders, are great A level heels, and I think it's the best heel work Triple H has ever done.
Well, you know, I'm going to say that I'm going to give props to all three guys in the match.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought even Batista, this is the best he's looked since he's been.
Oh, he looked great.
Agreed.
You know, and what I think I liked about Batista in this match is when he came back, I think he was really hurt because every match he had, whether it was against Del Rio or you know, even against Orton the other night, he's almost playing the role of, like, letting the heel get heat. Okay, I was taught that you got to let the heel get heat, so I'm going to work underneath. But that's not what Batista is. You know, if you project this bigger-than-life persona and what the hell are all these midgets and scrawny guys in my business for, you know, right?
He weighs $100 Like, he's 5 foot nothing. He's 100 pounds nothing. Whatever he was saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Pre-match interview, yeah.
But like he was letting these guys eat him up in matches, when that's really not the strength of his game. And he didn't do that tonight. You know, it was kind of like he was the monster against Orton. He was the monster against Bryan, and he kind of acted that way. And like when he made a mistake, that's when the other guys would capitalize, you know, or when Bryan would use his speed to get over on Batista, you know. To me, that's what I really liked about Batista tonight, is that he actually wrestled like he should have wrestled instead of trying to wrestle from underneath. And I agree with Dylan on Orton, but I've seen Orton work a lot in matches. And for me, Orton is the guy that when he's in there, you know, in the right setting, preferably, honestly, I think, Dylan, you agree with me this, that he wrestles better as a face. Do you disagree with that, Orton? Or do you prefer him as a heel? I talk to so many people. Might not have been you. Just
I actually prefer him as a heel.
Same here.
In the ring. Okay.
No, see, yeah. I remember.
I always thought of him as like Tully Blanchard, but not nearly as good.
Yeah, I just remember, like, I just know that he was, like, he was just tearing it up as a face, whether it was the Punk matches, the Henry matches, the Christian matches. Like, he was just having, like, an amazing run of, like, series of matches, you know, as a face. And so, for me, like, you know, but as a heel, he's been kind of hit or miss for me lately. But he's still a guy who can go. I just think that, for now on, guys like Cena, Orton, Batista, they're not going to be able to face each other in matches. You know, they're going to have to face other guys like Cesaro, Daniel Bryan, who's another, maybe even a Dolph Ziggler type, guys that are, you know, even if they've been there a while in WWE, they're still perceived as like the new breed of guys.
You got Reigns, Ambrose, you got
Reigns, the Shield guys, the Wyatt, exactly. That breed of guys, that group, that are the up-and-comers or that are fresh blood in the main event scene. That's who those guys are going to have to fight from now on. And that's, or you have like multi-man matches, three ways, four ways, you know, six-man tag.
Trios tags.
Yeah, trios tags, six-man tags. So, you know, that's where they're going to have to go with those guys if they want the crowd to respond to them the way they expect the crowd to respond. So that's what I think. So let's sum this show up. Overall, thumbs up, middle down. Pete, what do you think?
I would give it a solid thumbs up. I mean, you have two really super strong matches. I dug the opening tag, you know, the multiple tag match. So, I mean, yeah, there's just too much really strong stuff on the show to give it anything. I can see maybe a thumbs in the middle, but I'll give it a thumbs up because it really... You know, for opening up on the network, I think they did a pretty damn good job as a WrestleMania. I don't think it's the greatest WrestleMania of all time, like
hold on,
Johnny Sorrow.
Don't ruin
that. No, I can't ruin it.
Yeah, we were going to reveal at the end of the predictions that Johnny Sorrow felt this was the greatest WrestleMania.
Sorry. Spoiler alert, folks.
So it's cool. Yeah, just to give people a heads up, Johnny Sorrow said that he was too fucked up to do the show tonight. And so he didn't want to come off like a slurring, bumbling idiot. You know, the Johnny Sorrow trademarks. Having said that, Chris Z, greatest WrestleMania ever.
No, I wouldn't go that far. But it was definitely one of the better Manias in recent time, I thought, as far as a whole show, with the most memorable moment we'll probably have a Mania, maybe ever, you know, right. Ticker losing. But again, I did in the prediction show. I guess I'll do it again on this show when I give my final thoughts. Is the network? The network had a great night tonight. I mean, there were no issues. I know Dylan had some issues, and I've seen that some people with Xbox 360 had a few minor things. But my PS3 did not stop. And the quality was, of course, a little shaky at times, which I watched. I bought the pay per view itself. I got. Said Thursday, because I'm a quality whore on these pay-per-views, but
Christ.
Which I got to get another device. It's basically my device. It's the PS3. I got to get something else. But it didn't stop. Everything. I mean, it was a little 30 second lag, but that's to be expected, I guess. But yeah, the network had a tremendous night. A lot of your sports business media types were tweeting about it, saying it was a home run for WWE. So that's going to get pushed tomorrow. When they're supposed to announce the subscription numbers. I saw a lot of people tweeting about how they bought the network tonight for this show. So they had that going on for them. That was a great night for the business. The show itself, like I said, that one of the better Manias. A lot of questions coming out of this show, which is always good.
All right, hold on. We'll get into the future after we run down the card. We're not done yet.
Let me just throw one thing. I have a Roku. My thing played great. It might have been at the beginning of the show, maybe like 15, 20 seconds. And I think with the streaming, it takes a couple of seconds for it to pick up with all the bright lights and stuff. Like some of the, if you had the wrestler behind, like pyro and stuff. It takes a while, but after the 15 or 20 seconds, Roku was awesome to watch the show.
Yeah, I watched on Apple TV, like I said, with my nephew, watched the pre-show. Zero problems except for some minor audio issues early on that seemed to affect everybody, regardless of device. I think that was an in-house thing, not a device or a network issue. Dylan, thumbs up, thumbs middle, thumbs down.
I would say thumbs up. I don't think it's an overwhelming thumbs up in the sense that I didn't think it was a blow-away great show, but I don't think on paper there was any reason to believe it would be going in. It accomplished what it should have accomplished in at least, I would say, really three key areas. It got over Daniel Bryan in a convincing, believable way. You know, he beat everybody. He beat Triple H, he beat Batista, he beat Orton, and he beat them all pretty much decisively, you know.
With one arm.
Exactly. On the other level, it got over a new guy in Cesaro. You know, whether or not it's going to be a long-term thing, to speak to Pete's kind of cynicism about it, I think is open for debate. I agree with that to a degree. They did at least establish somebody else. There's another player. And potentially, they've got Bryan's challenger in Brock Lesnar, his long-term challenger. So there are things there. But as far as the network goes, on my end, I did have some problems, although nothing horrible. I tended to have, like, really bad luck with when I would have problems with the feed, though, like the last 3 minutes of the opener.
Oh, yeah.
But, as a whole, I was actually fine with it, and it very well could have been my own internet connection. So,
right.
Speaking as a whole, I thought the network performance was much better than I feared. Let's put it that way. Way better than I expected. So, it was a good show. I don't know if it was a blowaway great show, but it was certainly a good show. A very good show.
Well, I don't know if it's the greatest WrestleMania of all time. I don't think it was. I know, in all due respect to Johnny Sorrow, I might want to smoke what he's smoking to get that feeling. But before, and I'm going to call it a thumbs up show without rewatching Cena Wyatt because, you know, Dylan, you gave it a lot of high praise. So I really want to watch that match again, you know, without the distractions of a full room and a bunch of guys cheering and hooting and hollering and yeah. kind of focus on the match itself. And maybe I'll be able to appreciate it more in that context.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a rewatch too because Dylan, usually, same with Chris, I usually fall on the same size with you guys when it comes to matches or I'm not too far off. This seems like I have a real disconnect on this one with you, Dylan.
Right. And other thing, I think, and I didn't mention this earlier, is where I think that the Taker streak ending, it really ends that albatross that's hanging over every WrestleMania, right? What's yeah. going to follow the Taker match? How is the streak going to end? Well, we know it's not going to be against Punk. We know it's not going to be against Lesnar, right? So you always have these, like, things. How can a match ever follow the Undertaker match? Well, that's over with now, right? I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, what follows the Taker match because, well, two of the three, well, at least Dylan thinks that there'll never be another Taker match, you know? So, I mean, who cares? So now WrestleMania doesn't have that gimmick match anymore to, you know, maybe kill the show in the middle or, you know, have unnecessary or, you know, unforeseen harm to the heat or the excitement of the main events. And now you can kind of push the belt or the big program as your main event without worrying about that. So in a way, I think it accomplished that also. And with Cesaro, I think, Dylan, to your point, that Cesaro, they're showing confidence and that you think that they're going to push him big. I could easily see him as the Money in the Bank winner this year. But I also think that he replaces Punk in one way in that they're always looking for guys that are clean living. You know what I mean? Like when yep. When Punk got pushed, it's because there was a lot of criticism about drugs in the business, and they knew if there was one guy that they could rely on to pass the wellness test, it was going to be Punk. And from what I know from friends in the industry, from people that know Claudio Castagnoli well, he's another one of those guys where you're not going to really have to worry about him failing wellness test. That
you and he's know. The guy you can loop trot out on the show and give him 15-20 minutes and he can put up a, you know,
absolutely
get a chunk and throw up a 4-star match.
Right, you know? Right. But I'm thinking that, like, you know, as an ambassador for the company and their wellness program and stuff, I'm not saying that that's something that's at the forefront, you know, that's at the forefront of all their thoughts. Like I said, long night, guys. Give me a break. But it is something to consider that he does fill that role as well. So, like I said, I'm looking forward to rewatching Cena Wyatt. Hell, I might do that after this podcast if I can stay awake. But I want to talk now before we let you guys go. The future. What's going to happen? Chris, I know you're chomping at the bit. You wanted to talk about the future. I want to open it up to you. What do you think is going to happen now?
Well, now you have the questions. All right. Where does Daniel Bryan go from here? Who does he wrestle next? What did the authority do? Who do they throw out there? You know, how do they handle this? Will they still be in positions of power? Will Vince come back tomorrow night? Then you have Sting. Sting, is he going to be on Raw? What is he going to do? Undertaker, where does he go from here? Does he retire or does he come back? Cena and Wyatt, is that over yet or is it not? Will Cena get his, you know, get his ass kicked by the Wyatts? The Shield, where do they go next? Because they need somewhere to go. There's a lot of questions coming out of this show. The one thing I was going to mention, and shit, I'm losing my train of thought now. But
come on, Chris. Okay. Well, we'll get back with you, Chris, when you regain your thoughts. Shoo.
All night.
I think it's interesting now, especially with the network. I'm kind of thinking they might go with longer title reigns and stuff to really get the belt back over a little stronger. I'm curious on what they're going to do with Daniel Bryan. I think the first rematch they're going to do, probably on Raw or something. Probably not the first night. But maybe the next one, they're definitely going to go with him and Orton again, because since Orton didn't eat the pinfall. He's the champ who didn't get pinned. I know we've seen enough Daniel Bryan Orton, and I don't think you should. Now with the network, they're not worried about maybe busting. They don't have to worry about a buy rate. They can trot it out as a main event, and since we're already bought the network, we kind of got to eat it until they know where they want to do it. But at least we'll give you another win for Daniel Bryan. I think him and Brock, either you short shifted and build it to SummerSlam, or you wait a year and hopefully give Daniel Bryan a run, make him like a real working champion, and maybe build it up to WrestleMania and stuff. The Shield, I think they got to go in a direction. Maybe put them in a program with we talked about the Wyatts again, or maybe they can go in, maybe get going with a threesome with Orton, Batista, and maybe somebody else, maybe Triple H or something. I don't know. Maybe help them establish their credibility. But it's interesting. It's a really interesting time because this, I think, it could become another. I think it's going to be boom or bust for the WWE with the network and stuff. It's exciting times.
What do you think, Dylan? Where do you think they go from here?
I do want to ask this question real quick. How am I alone in thinking it would be really awesome if Stephanie tore her quad and that was her injury?
unless the quad is in the heel, I don't think so.
setting aside that terrible joke, I think basically a lot of what Chris and Pete just said, those are all valid questions and things to look at going forward, but there are a couple other things that are business related that I think are going to be interesting. The network is obviously one. The TV rights deal is obviously another. And, that's an entirely separate podcast, obviously. But you got to think about what we saw tonight and what the new sort of changing business model means for the future of this company. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to say it's completely over, but I do think the age of the part-timers may have been partially buried tonight. I don't know that there's any value in it when you don't have to all that emphasis on buy rates, when the game has changed the way it's going to change with TV rights. I can't see them forking over the kind of money for these guys unless there is more of a long-term detailed commitment. I think even Lesnar, either he's going to be expected to do more dates, or there's going to be some other sort of way of presenting him as a more full-time guy, even if he's not full-time. So I think that's one change that we're probably going to see sooner rather than later.
I agree.
I don't think you're going to see a lot of manias where there's three or four matches that are completely eaten up by part-timers anymore. I think those days are done. And I think another thing, kind of the weird, I don't know if I would call this the elephant in the room. This is like the mouse in the room, which is the they're doing the announcement tomorrow of the how many subscribers there are. And by all accounts, it's looking like it's going to be great. But the other announcement tomorrow is going to be the Toby Keith, Jeff Jarrett wrestling promotion announcement. And while on the one hand, that is certainly laughable and kind of silly to even think about, I think this is potentially a very interesting development for the WWE, because how they perceive this, particularly with how they're going to be positioned on the business end coming out of Mania, how they perceive this new promotion, I think may also sort of fuel some of the decision making going forward when it comes to who they push, who they sign, which I think is a much bigger emphasis when it comes to this promotion, and how they run developmental. So that could be a kind of a weird contributing factor to some other things we're going to see over the course of this year and going forward. It seems kind of silly and almost laughable and not connected, but I think it kind of is connected to the bigger business picture and the bigger business picture coming out of Mania.
Can I get my points in real quick that I was trying to look in?
you find your notes. Okay.
The two things that I were going to mention were, regarding Cesaro, he's John Cena's training partner. I think Cesaro, he's got, he is very well connected right now.
When did those notes become available that he was Cena's training partner?
It's all over that Muscle and Fitness magazine.
I thought about that too much ago.
I didn't know that it wasn't a post that any message board I frequent. I didn't know.
Cena said that Cesaro, the reason why he loves training with Cesaro is he's the only guy that can hang with him as far as lifting. But other than that, you know, tonight felt like the end of an era in a way. You know, we talked about this before, but with the Hogan Austin Rock deal toasting each other, that just felt like some finality there with those guys. And then Triple H, you know, losing to Daniel Bryan like he did, the streak ending. This feels like, okay, we're about to enter a whole new age. We're entering Triple H's WWE, what he envisions it to be, who he wants to be on top, how he wants him portrayed. This is where we're at right now. So I think, definitely in the next few months, we're going to see a lot more new faces. And I'm loving it, man. It's interesting to me to watch how this goes down.
You know what? I think that you're right in some degree, Chris. But at the same time, you got to remember a lot of the things that are happening now. The Daniel Bryan push, the reason he's in the main event, the Cesaro push. It's happening because the fans spoke out against the company at the live shows. This, you know, I don't think this is so much a Triple H decision, because you got to remember, this was supposed to be Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, Punk versus Triple H, with Triple H going over, you know, Orton and Batista as your selling point main event. This was not, I mean, so it's not like this is like Triple H's great vision. No,
it wasn't definitely the plan to launch everybody.
Hold on, Chris, let me finish, and I'm going to let you respond. This is the company, maybe it's Triple H's response to the crowd of actually giving them what they want instead of saying, we know what's best for you. That might be the difference, but I don't feel that like this push is because it's the Triple H era. I think it's just a realization that if our crowds are hijacking our shows or are forcing us to change our long-term plans, then we're going to be more responsive to them so that our shows look better. And the fact that Daniel Bryan is now supposedly number two in merchandise or something, that he is now a big merchandise mover and that he is now a ratings mover. Funny how you do that when you book a guy to be important, huh? You know, that happens, but that is actually what's driving this and not because it's the Triple H era. Chris, I'm going to let you respond. I'm going to let Dylan and Pete respond to that.
Well, that shows some pro action from Triple H to do that, because some of these wrestling guys would never have done that like that. They said, well, tough shit, fans. This is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. But CM Punk leaving, though, is the big deal with all this going on. And the fact that Triple H, I don't think he personally liked Punk anyway. I mean, he's pretty much kept that as a secret. And, you know, in public, that there's no love there between those two. So, you know, getting Punk out of there, you know, kind of clears out some space. And,
relates to your original point, though.
The changing that we know with the fans, you know, giving the fans what they want, that's what you got to do. You know, you want to keep them happy. So if they're showing that they're going to do stuff like that, they're going to change WrestleMania a month away from the date, just about, you know, to do that, to change the card. That says something about how they're willing to work.
I don't know. What do you think, Dylan?
You know, I don't have... To me, the jury's out on whether or not Triple H is going to be, a net positive or a net negative as a sort of leading figure. I don't know the answer to that. You know, as a, you know, somebody who sort of reflexively hates Triple H, my bias is to think he's going to be awful. But having said that, a lot of the guys who he's been high on supposedly over the years are people who I like a lot. Sheamus, Antonio Cesaro. So, I mean, it's not as if he doesn't have an eye for talent. It's not as if he doesn't know
what constitutes a good performer. I think that that's, you know, I think he does know those things. Having said that, I kind of have mixed feelings about the role of the fans in sort of getting some of these guys over. Because on the one hand, I do agree with your point, Will, that Brian and even Punk before Brian, and then Cesaro.
Brian,
and
Punk, and Cesaro, The Shield, The Wyatt.
The Shield.
That's all fans.
All these guys. But having said that, The Shield were presented as stars from the very beginning. The Wyatts were presented as stars from the very beginning. Punk is a different beast, and I think Punk's influence is going to be debated and become a really interesting topic of discussion as we get closer to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame season. But he's an interesting guy in general as a figure. Brian, I think, is sort of the weirdest one to sort of discuss, because on the one hand, I see both sides of this argument. I see the side that says the company tried to bury him, they tried to shun him down the card, they did everything they could to make it less easy for him to get over, even as he was getting over with the crowds. But on the flip side, a lot of this stuff was booked as an elaborate troll, with the payoff being tonight. So I don't want to give them a ton of credit.
Wait, hold on, Dylan. Let me clarify. I think that the last 6 weeks, or maybe even post-Rumble, it was an elaborate troll. Prior to Rumble, like when the direction was Brian Sheamus, or when the direction was Brian as a member of the Wyatts, all of that, I don't think that was a troll. I think that was just the company trying to keep this guy as a great utility player in the upper mid-card, and the fans forced his hand. Now, are you saying that prior to that it was a troll as well, or just when the fans kind of hijacked the Rumble and beyond?
I think it is very difficult to say with any degree of certainty which is true, because, on the one hand, if you look at the Rumble and the way everything was shit on, it's kind of, I mean, it is what it is, okay? But on the other hand, I don't believe, now maybe the claims from Ryan Russell Sheamus, I'm not saying that's wrong, that very well may be true, you know, but I also don't believe that the long-term plan was just to shunt Brian down into the mid-card, or the upper mid-card. I just don't believe that. If that were the plan, let me put it this way, if that were the plan, they gave this guy so much TV time throughout the entire last year that it would be the most bizarre burial in the history of professional wrestling. Because this is a guy that on the night Brock Lesnar came back, was in the main event angle, closing out Raw for 25 minutes at the end. I mean, like, there's no way. And that was when all the stuff was going on the Wyatts, and people were freaking out. Oh, they're shunting him aside, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet he was the entire focus of that show. So I don't think, maybe this Mania was not going to be his year. Maybe, in fact, probably that's true. But do I think they would have just sort of, kind of tossed him aside like an Alberto Del Rio type guy who, got to this point and then just fell off a cliff? I just don't think so. I think the booking was, there's no reason to believe that.
I agree with that point, Dylan, and I'm going to let Pete respond after I make a quick point. To me, when I'm saying upper mid-card guy, I'm saying, like, we talked about Hogan, Rock Austin tonight at the beginning of the show. And my point has always been with Punk, my point has always been with Brian, that in pushing these guys, it's not that they're at John Cena's level or that they're at Rock's level or Hogan's or Austin's level. It's that they've never been given the ball to run with it at that level. And now I think kind of like the way they've pushed Brian in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, I think you're kind of seeing that they're trying to do that with him. Hey, we're going to let this guy run with the ball and see how his merch numbers do, how his ratings do, see what he can pull into house shows. You know, the typical barometers, because now we can't use buy rates as a barometer anymore. So we're going to use these other traditional barometers. But at the same time, if you look at someone like Mick Foley in the Attitude Era, all over TV, always up in that main event level, but nobody mistakes Mick Foley for Austin and The Rock. You know what I mean? He was a great utility guy who was always in entertaining segments, always pulled a lot of TV time, who was there to put over the guys that they wanted to push in a way. And then he'd have his cup of coffee for a day or two at the world title, just so they'd go back to the the real guys they were pushing or wanted up on top. You know, always that guy who's used to get someone else over. That's kind of what I thought that they felt Brian's role would be. Hey, he's super over with the fans, super lovable guy, just like Mick Foley. To me, that's what I think they wanted. I think they wanted Brian to be their Mick Foley. And the fans kind of forced their hands the way they never did with Foley. That's kind of where I'm getting it. Shu, what do you think?
I think the Zach Foley comparison is really good. Yeah, that's where I really thought they really wanted Daniel Bryan kind of in that Mick Foley where you could bring him in and headline a pay-per-view here and there, but not the real big ones, and keep him strong headlining Raw where you're all over TV, or maybe even if you throw it back to like the 90s, maybe a Davey Boy Smith or like a Ricky Steamboat type of thing where you could trot him out, maybe even Owen Hart where you trot him out, you can still position him in the right angle as a headliner.
And you have a great mechanic who's always going to be in the ring. Right. And yeah, that's always been my argument with Johnny Sorrow, who's inebriated tonight, is that it's not that Punk wasn't one of the top guys. It's that they didn't really give him the ball to be the number one top guy. You know, because remember when Punk was world champ, it was John Cena headlining, like, I want to say, like, absurd. Like, there was a run where, like, John Cena headlined 6 or 7 pay-per-views while Punk was the champ. You know?
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was against guys like Johnny Ace and The Big Show and Kane and, you know, all those horrible programs. And then, you know, with Bryan, it was, hey, you know, we're going to give you all this really great match, Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan in the opener, and you're going to love it. And we did. And then the crowd was like, oh, shit, Daniel Bryan didn't get it. And we're going to let John Cena and Daniel Bryan hit SummerSlam. And, well, it didn't do the numbers we wanted, so that proves Brian can't draw. Even though, like, they just gave Brian the shot because John Cena came out and said, Daniel Bryan, you deserve a shot. Done. But, yeah, what a great, compelling way to build up a pay-per-view. You know?
That's the other thing. You don't remember, like, they only have 4 weeks, and then all of a sudden turn Daniel Bryan into a viable headliner that headline that show. I mean, it's like, come on.
Yeah, and then
there's only so much you can do in 4 weeks. Months.
Dylan, you got to agree with this. Some of that Orton stuff, man, was some of the worst booked stuff, you know, with Big Show, where it looked like they were trying to channel the Yes chant to the Big Show of all the people.
There was a lot of stuff that I thought was done terribly.
What the fuck stuff, yeah. You know, that's kind of my point. Is not that, you know, where's what I'm seeing with Brian now and what we're talking about. It's not about, you know, measuring somebody's worth by how many minutes they get on TV or whatever, but the way they're perceived. Austin was a big star and a big guy because they took that ball and they ran with it until his neck and his knees gave out.
He was the only one who stunned Vince. Rock, he was the only one who got his hands on Vince. Rock, you know,
given that path to run and run until Hollywood lights came shining. Hogan was there until he got fucking old. And these, you know what I mean? And he became a problem in the back. I mean, Cena is still that big super time main event player. But the thing is, why can't someone else be given that chance? It's not like, I hate when the wrestlers say, well, you got to take it and grab it and grab the brass ring and go with it. When, you know, we know the backstage stories. We know that wrestlers get their ideas shot down all the time, that they're not given the opportunities. You know what I mean? That they have these scripted promos, that they're put in programs that anybody with an eye for talent can see are going to be shams. We've seen what they've done with Del Rio. You know, they give the guy no direction. Well, you're Mexican, so you'll get over with the Mexicans. Good luck. You know what I mean? Right? Yeah. I mean, like, I think Del Rio's an amazing talent. I think that he always delivers in the ring, but nobody gives a fuck about him because nobody's ever been given a reason to give a fuck about him.
Yeah, I just tuned back into the product, and when I watched him work Batista those 2 times, Del Rio looked like a horrible wrestler. But then you see him on other wrestling other people, and he was having good matches. So it was just,
I think Del Rio looked horrible at all against Batista. I think Batista looked horrible.
Well, yeah, but it was a group thing. I mean, if one's looking bad, the match doesn't get over and looks like shit, and that's what I thought. I mean,
Now I really hope Daniel Bryan is given that chance just to be the main event guy. You know what I mean? Just, hey, you're our guy. You're the guy who's going to help John Cena pick up some of these make-a-wishes and appear at the troops, and go plant the first tree in some forest for some conservation project. And, you know, we're going to market you and push you and, you know, get that machine behind you the way we did with Hogan and Austin and Rock. Not saying that he will be the next Hogan or Austin Rock, but you never know if a guy's going to be the next big thing until you give him a shot to be the next big thing. That's kind of my point, Dylan. I hope you agree with some of that. But final thoughts. I'm excited about the WWE product. I'm excited about the direction they're going. Extreme Rules, what do you want the main event to be? Pete.
Oh, man. Daniel Bryan and whoever they want to push. I really don't know. Daniel Bryan and somebody.
Your fantasy booking, asshole. Come on, Dylan.
All right. Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar.
So you wanted them to blow their wad?
I wasn't expecting the question.
Well, they've fucked themselves. I mean, they don't have any other heel coming out of this that's credible. So, I mean, to me, given the situation, the logical thing to do would be have Bryan wrestle Cena and beat him clean again. But that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
Because the Cena Wyatt thing is not over. And there's no way they're going to have him beat Cena clean as a whistle two times in a row. Well, I shouldn't say there's no way, but I don't think it's likely.
I think they're going to go Brian Orton. I really think that. And
I think it's going to be Brian Orton. I think it will be Brian Orton. I don't want to see it, but I think Brian Orton didn't take the fall in this match, as Chris pointed out on the last show. And, you know, Orton was the champion, so I think that's the match you're going to get, whether you want it or not.
Y'all suck at fantasy booking. Christy?
I actually think it's going to be a rematch in some type of gimmick form, a three-way, whether it's a cage or something gimmicky for Extreme Rules. I think it'll be a three-way match, and I think that's probably where we get like a Batista turn or something like that happening.
Okay.
So that's what I think.
Well, I'm hoping that the Meltzer prediction of a Shield versus Evolution feud starts sooner than later. Because I think the Shield, I think one, Orton, Batista, and now Triple H, I think all three of those guys are more game to have good to great matches with.
Doesn't that defeat your purpose of having Daniel Bryan headline the next show?
And no. I'm saying
reduce the CM Punk level of champion.
I'm not saying headline with the Shield match. What I'm saying is you get those guys out of that main event title picture, because I don't want to see any of them in the title picture. Okay.
And who would you have with Punk? I mean, with Daniel Bryan then.
Well, first, because Bray Wyatt was defeated tonight, I say you do go John Cena to quickly build up that Bryan credibility as world champ, where
he have Bray screw him in the championship.
I think you go with the Bree Nikki dissension right there, where you have, you know what I mean, where you have
Nikki Total Divas into your main event.
Join those Total Divas. You market the hell out of that shit. You have Nikki and Cena's corner, and they're de facto heels, right? Because Nikki's the one who beat up Brie in the match. You have Brie there with Bryan, and then you have their story, and you're filming that shit for Total Divas. And then you have Bryan beat John Cena clean as a whistle in that main event. And then fucking Bray Wyatt, you have him beat up Nikki after the show and then resume that feud. I don't care. You know, whatever. Or have Nikki join the Wyatt family as their like little cousin hog or something, and you know, well, they're not the hog family, but, you know, their little Wyatt cousin with her missing tooth. Did you see Total Divas when her tooth got knocked out?
Never watched Total Divas ever.
She got knocked out, so she could be their like missing tooth cousin, you know, her cousin, and join them. I don't know. I'm just rambling right now.
It's going to be hilarious when Rusev is Bryan's first challenger.
Yeah, right. but no, actually, when you said
Bo Dallas,
right? Brock was really come out.
Bo Dallas,
right? You're right though, guys. Brock. Well, Cesaro's still technically a heel, even though he's kind of like in that Bret Hart role.
He's a face.
Come on,
he'll be a face after tomorrow, bro.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. We'll see if him and Uncle Zeb hug it out. Wonders for Kane.
He's going to give him a forearm, because I don't think Zeb could take the wheel of shame right now. Giant swing or whatever. What do they call it?
the other giant swing. But actually, I don't know what they call it. I call it the giant swing. Guys, okay, somebody's yawning on the air.
Me.
Very unprofessional.
Anyway. I just want to say one thing about Triple H.
Things going long.
Yeah, I don't have confidence in him, but I do feel he's going to try to push younger talent since he's so tied in with the NXT program stuff. And he has a lot of, since that's his baby, I really think it's his way. He's going to really start pushing younger talent.
All right, so Brian's first opponent's going to be Rusev. I like it. Take it. book it for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Guys, since Chris Z gave us our cue to go home, I'm going to shut this thing down. We'll have plenty more to say on future reaction shows, I'm sure. We'll be here again next month for Extreme Rules. Pete, want to thank you for joining us in the place of inebriated Johnny Sorrow. Not that we can't have you and Johnny on the show at the same time. Just want to really thank you for showing up. Chris and Dylan, talk to you guys all the time. We'll see you again on the next one. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Place to Be Nation's reaction show to WrestleMania 30. Until the next pay-per-view, we'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Yes! 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 Yes!